This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Welcome to another episode of ILTA's Technical Competency Podcast Series. My name is Beth Ann Studu, and I'm the Director of Publications and Press. And today I am thrilled to be joined by our friend, Michael. Michael, welcome.
Thank you, Beth Ann.
One of the greatest things about doing this series of podcasts is that we've been able to talk to practicing attorneys, partners, members, but today we get to sit down from a slightly different angle and talk a little bit about the school side, the education, if you will. And starting very much from the top, everyone who passes the bar, everyone who thinks about going to law school, every practicing attorney, everyone knows that ABA Rule 1.1 states that lawyers must provide competent representation. All jokes aside, competency is not only keeping abreast of the laws as they change, but keeping abreast of the relevant technology to represent clients. From the university perspective, Michael, how is your program preparing future generations to be ready when they enter the workforce?
That's a great question, Beth Ann, because actually it's a very hot topic within the academic law school environment. You know, from the introduction, I'm the law librarian, so I'm not a member of the doctrinal faculty that would sort of normally be teaching law school classes. What I am is a clinical professor of law, which gives me the ability to have classes and teach. And so it's a matter of having a conversation with my colleagues, other faculty members, about how and where this technology competency fits into the curriculum. That's probably the key thing. That it's not stopped anybody from doing the technology or teaching technology, but we're a little bit of all over the map in terms of what we're trying to accomplish with teaching technology. And part of that is because we don't have yet a really great idea about what we even mean by technology competency. Some would argue that, you know, the comment 8 to Rule 1.1 says you have to know technology. And there's a lot of people say, well, it doesn't mean you have to know technology. In other words, you don't have to be a coder. You don't have to be able to take apart a PC and put it back together. It's more about understanding what the technology can do, and more importantly, understanding your own limitations about what you may or may not understand about technology, and finding the appropriate help in that area. In that vein, it's nothing new. So for example, valuations questions, right? So when you have a case and you're wondering about, you know, what are the damages here? Well, most lawyers hire experts to help figure out what are the damages in a particular case. So it's about being able to manage those experts, understand what they're doing, and make sure that they're working properly. So same thing with technology. What are we teaching? What do we need to teach to make sure that our future lawyers are able to competently work with technology? That's a very long answer to the question, but hopefully at least got started for you.
Well, I think it's an interesting role you kind of straddle, shall we say. Being the Associate Dean of Technology and Information puts you right kind of in the crosshairs of that technical competency. How do you think your opinions on technical competency have evolved over the last few years, specifically between this period we're talking today in 2023, and it's going to prove it?
Another excellent question. One of the things that we also, we don't struggle with, but we also have to clarify is that there are sort of two ways of thinking about the technology. There's ed tech and there's tech ed. So part of my portfolio includes the educational technology associated with, you know, running a law school. And of course, that ramped up significantly during the pandemic when everybody had to go to Zoom, figure out how to do hybrid courses, how to make sure that all the equipment and so forth were working in, you know, and that's all part of what a lawyer also needs to know. I mean, you have any number of courthouses that suddenly had to switch over. You know, had to be able to be competent with that kind of what we call educational technology. It's really technology for learning, right? So training. But then there's the tech ed, which is to say technology education. And so that's the part that we're kind of trying to get more clearly defined so that we can have the other thing too is there's the law of technology and there's the technology of law. And which is to say, the law of technology is like intellectual property law, you know, IP, copyright, trademark. And so you have a lot of programs who focus on that, and that's important. And certainly behind that, there has to be an understanding of technology, but that's like the law part of technology. The technology of law is what I would describe as knowing things like how to use Word, how to use Excel, how to use a practice management system, how to make sure you understand cybersecurity issues. So there's those sort of two different parts that sometimes get mixed together. So again, trying to make clear what is, say, a doctrinal law-based thing versus a skill, that's part of the conversation that, you know, we're all engaged in right now. I mean, people are moving forward with courses and so forth, but we still don't have sort of a standardized, big picture way of thinking about these things.
I do very much think that that idea between the two sides of your coin, shall we say, is an interesting place for technology to move so much more readily than the law has. And I think that given the changes to the market now between all the generative AI programs, specifically Google Bard, DALL-E, Harvey, there's a whole other tool set available on the market that there wasn't just, let's say, 2 years ago, a year ago, and certainly not in the common nomenclature that we're having these discussions. How do you think technology competency will have to evolve given generative AI tools?
That's the $64 million question right now. I mean, part of the problem with it is it's moving so quickly. Literally anything I would read today would probably be out of date tomorrow or by next week for sure. And so making sure that we are not just keeping abreast, but also then being able to sort out all these different things that are happening. I have many colleagues in the, especially in the law library side of things, law librarians. And I point to the law librarians actually as the people who are sort of most closely related to this space, in part because it seems that generative AI is coming first and foremost for search, right? I mean, it's being added to the tools like Google or like Bing. But really what it's trying to do is in some ways replace what librarians can do. I mean, people would argue, well, that's what Google was trying to do. Google hasn't done that. There's still a place for librarians and for legal researchers. But generative AI poses a greater, not threat, but opportunity for changing the landscape in a way that librarians need to be nimble about. That's why I think within the law school context, law librarians are in the best position to help figure out how to sort through this stuff. Now, everybody's trying to do it because generative AI isn't just a law thing. It's like education, higher ed. It's everywhere. It just so happens that many of the what will generative AI replace first tend to say, you know, law or financial analysts or those kinds of things. And so what does that mean? Well, okay, so it means that they could find things that librarians would typically be asked to find, right? Or the first year associate or the second year associate. And the question is, can they really do that? And right now, what we're seeing is they can't. There are some things they can do with mass data sets that are really good. So, for example, in the world of administrative regulations, there are comments that are part of the process. It's all part of the how regulations are made. Well, the thing about comments is they can range from actual comments to things actually generated by a bot to things that are well thought out, the professional organization. Generative AI actually right now could probably do a pretty good job of ingesting that information and helping sort out what's real and what's important to look at versus what's kind of snarky or, you know, not as useful as some of the commentary. But when it comes to doing things like actual legal research, I have heard too many stories. They're anecdotal for sure. There's been no hard studies that I've seen, you know, about generative AI. I guess the term is hallucinating. So they're going to make things up, or it makes things up. So citations, for example, it knows what a citation is. It knows what a citation should look like. So therefore, it can come up with a citation. Is it a real citation? Not necessarily. And the thing is with these tools is you can push back and say, you know, I don't think that's correct. And the generative AI will say, well, you're right. Sorry about that. Let me try again. So there's right now almost as much time and energy to vet whatever's being produced and to not be able to rely on it that is sort of causing this initial, I think, slower adoption of it. But that's the most important thing to be aware of. It still has a lot of need for verification. Now, I'm sure it'll get past that at some point. And that's what we need to be thinking about is, how are we sure that it's past that point? And then when we get past that point, how do we integrate that into what we're doing now? And that's the thing, it's changing so quickly. It's just really hard to say, well, this is what we should do today, because it won't be what we will do tomorrow.
Would it be fair to say then that the takeaway from your feelings about generative AI would be simply to not piss off the law librarians?
I think that's fair. I actually, so the Law Journal Law Review folks who work closely with the librarians here just gifted us with some coffee mugs that said something to the effect of, if you run into a problem, do what the law librarian told you to do in the first instance. So yeah.
Oh, I would really love one of those mugs. Just
Oh.
putting that out there. So, assuming that law librarians are the, one step down from God, we can move into the idea of ethics codes, honor codes, and being just a good steward of technology. I do think there are things that your university, other institutions are thinking about that may not have been topics previously. Are there things that faculty still have to be educated on that are not just student-based that we really need to take into account for technical competency?
Oh yeah, faculty still need to learn about sort of everything that can be done with technology. I mean, they're not focused on necessarily the tools, and how they're utilized. So, for example, in legal writing, people are supposed to produce a brief, right, as an assignment. But what they don't include in the teaching is, well, how do you use Word to make that happen effectively? I mean, everybody knows you can do table of authorities. You can use Word to, dramatically reduce the time, create efficiencies in the way you develop a document. But we don't have a formalized way of presenting that or having it integrated into the curriculum. So I think part of what we have to think about is how can we, in any course, do a better job of figuring out how to integrate in what technology might be related to that. So, for example, in civil procedure, when you're talking about discovery, there's an opportunity there to talk about e-discovery, which again, you can talk about e-discovery from the side of the law, or you can talk about e-discovery from here's how you use relativity and what does that actually mean, right? And that's also where law librarians fit in, because at the end of the day, when you use relativity, you're basically doing the same kind of work that you're doing when you're using Westlaw or Lexis in terms of how the tool works. So part of it is there still needs to be a more specific conversation about how these things fit together. Part of it too is people kind of get sidetracked with the idea, oh, this is new technology and we got to figure out how this all works in. But part of the question is, well, do we really need to figure out, is this something brand new, or is this just another flavor of a thing we're already doing? There's been some really great webinars on that, and I think that's part of the challenge too is the law faculty need to be sophisticated enough about understanding technology to figure out where it's going to fit in. Not that they have to necessarily be able to do it. I mean, that's always been my thing. I'm not someone who, well, I know how to do a little bit of coding, but I'm not really a technologist. I'm sort of more of an accidental technologist. I just have always been able to see where the technology should probably fit in and do a pretty decent job of being able to talk to technologists about what the needs are for what we're trying to do with the technology. That's where I think right now the a little bit of the holdup is that conversation. And it's going to vary from school to school, depending on, frankly, how sophisticated the particular view of what the curriculum should be. But all that's being discussed right now.
I think the conversation is much larger than just the two of us, just a few institutions. And I do think that there is a space in this to have a conversation with the students who are upcoming. They're certainly much more technologically savvy than previous generations. But I do think there always will have to be a space for not only teaching within law school from the education side, but certainly teaching from the technology side. Michael, thank you so much for your time.
Yes, although Beth Ann, I'd like to push back just a tiny bit. There is the
Please.
myth. There is the myth of the digital native. It is assumed that because people are young and they use technology, that they know how to use technology. That's not what's happening. They can use technology, but do they understand what they're doing and they really understand what's under the hood? And for the most part, they do not. And this is a common thing I hear. Student will come in and say, oh, I'm clerking at a firm this summer and they need a new practice management system. And they told me to figure out what it should be because they assume I know technology and they don't. And we need to figure out how to put that into the curriculum. So that's just part of what they do know now. And generative AI, I think, is giving us that sort of, you know, we're sort of past an inflection point now where this has to be a much stronger component within the curriculum.
Your point on the TikTok generations are very well noted and very well taken. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Beth Ann.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.